While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
All right, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, bringing you sporting action from around the Rebel County as well as further afield. Plenty coming on the show tonight, including my legend with Cork legend Patrick Horgan later on in the show. But first to rugby, and unfortunately Leinster are beating Harlequins in their Champions Cup game at 12-7 in the Aviva so far. But Munster are of course in action themselves tonight against Bath in the Rec at 8 p.m. and that's coming of course against former head coach Johan van Gran. Now Rory spoke to Alan Quinlan and Fiona Hayes about the fixture on the Red 78 podcast from Off the Ball.
Let's look ahead to a big game against Bath this weekend. In fact, it's a busy, busy period for Munster with five huge games coming up over the next month, because you've got Gloucester at Super Valley Park at Queen the following week, away to the Ospreys, then the week of Christmas, just after Christmas, you've got Leinster, and then it's Ulster on the 2nd of January. It's a very, very busy period for Munster. Very, very exciting to watch as a Munster fan, though. Some team news for Munster. Jack O'Donoghue failed HIA on Saturday night. He'll enter the return to play protocols. Jack Crowley set out training yesterday with a leg injury. Hopefully that's not too serious. Michael Alatoa, as we've been discussing, has joined from Claremont or Verne. And they're facing a Bath side this weekend. Top of the Premiership, five wins and one defeat. And of course, managed by Johan van Gran. A good Bath team as well, Alan Quinlan.
Yeah, it's a very strong side. Very strong squad. Just on what you're saying there, Rory, I like before Saturday, you're looking at 10 weeks on the trot till the end of January. Yeah. It's the most attritional time of the year for players, for squads. I know there's a bit of rotation around Christmas and there has to be. No player can play. Well, certainly none of the internationals can play 10 weeks in a row. I don't think it's very rare if any players will play 10 weeks in a trot. So you need a good squad. The narrative at the weekend was Munster had a very strong team out close to their best. Well, the problem, is the depth around tight end. That's why Michael Alalatoa has come in, and he should do a good job. He's a very powerful, strong scrummager as well. And I think he goes straight into the squad at the weekend. There's no question about that. I think they brought him into for a reason. There's no point in waiting and having, Munster have a decent scrum at the weekend. They have a good chance. John Klein coming back, I think, from the international stuff, I think he's got to go straight back into whether it's the starting team or not. I think Edmund Adogbo, if you can get him in there as well, they need a little bit more power and ballast, and they will come up against a forward pack at the weekend that's very powerful, very cohesive, very aggressive. And they have some superstars in their back line, and I think if they get any sort of dominance up front against Munster could be in trouble. Henry Arundel, what a freakish talent he is. He got two tries at the weekend. He's such a speedster. Ollie Lawrence, Tom de Glanville, they've so many good players, and I think it's something that they got to be very mindful of. But first and foremost, I think, this is a long attritional run, and obviously there's a bit of a plan the next few weeks and be a bit of rotation around Christmas and stuff like that. But for Europe, you pick something up on the road here and it's gives such a boost to your campaign, to your run. There'll be great excitement down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh next weekend and the following weekend against Gloucester. So I think they've got to focus on themselves, try and learn from what happened at the weekend, particularly some of that control in the second half. And look, you can't, if you look at some of the stats from the game, Rory, and this is probably this stuff makes me feel that they're on the right track, because I think some of the attack last year, at times we saw it sporadically, but the season before and the year they won the URC, I think it was very impressive. They had 8 clean breaks the other day in the game, 21 defenders beaten, 7 turnovers won. So a lot of those stats were like 369 metres gained. So if they can get on the right track there and get some line breaks, get their breakdown sorted, well, you know, they can go and ask some questions. And there's always been a debate about the Gallagher Premiership and the URC. I remember back in the day when Rog questioned the quality of the English league at the time, and we went over to Leicester to play him in the European Cup, and like, we're like, Jesus, what a week to say this, Rog. But he nailed the kick to win us the game from the halfway line, and he was player of the match, and he was able to, you know, go around and talk about that afterwards. But they are a very strong side. Finn Russell is the obvious kind of superstar that they have. Such a powerful addition to any team as regards that pace, that tempo, the brilliance he can bring. But sometimes he can be a weakness to teams as well if they get after him and put pressure. So once they've got a front up, I think this is, they've got to physically be really, really up for this and in, try and impose their own game. Get their scrum right and their line out. And I think you've got to play Thomas Ahern here. You know, when I'm talking about Adogbo and John Klein coming back, if they were to play, you're putting Ty Byrne in the back row. I think you have to play Thomas Ahern here to try and make sure you win line out and put pressure on the opposition. So look, Ben Spencer at scrum half is very good for them. So they'll be full of confidence. They won at the weekend away at Saracens, which is very impressive. The only team to beat him this year has been Leicester, 22-20. So, yeah, they're the league champions. They won the Challenge Cup last year. They won 3 trophies. They won the English Premiership trophy as well. So the Johan Van Gran factor, I don't think they'll be... He'd love to beat Munster here. Look, he won't come out and save. And you know, when you he won't want Munster coming into his backyard and winning and stuff like that. And yeah, it's an intriguing, tough fixture for Munster. A really, really difficult one. I've played there before at the Rec. It's a tough place to go. Things can start kind of unraveling. The crowd are very close to the touchline. So yeah, look, it's a big challenge and it should be an exciting one. European rugby is just special and brings out, you know, the greatness in people, individuals and teams as well. So I think because of, you know, as long as they don't drop their heads this week, which I don't think they will, I think they have a chance, but it's a really difficult one and it's a tough place to go.
Yeah, it certainly is a tough place to go, Fionn, but if we get a win this weekend, it sets things up very, very nicely for Páirc Uí Chaoin the following week.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what you want, your first European game, even though it's an away game, you need to be going out there. And if you look, like Queenie spoke about the lads, but if you even look at that line out, you've people that are going to be chomping at the bit. You've Charlie Ewells, Quinn Roo, Ross Maloney. These guys are all over 30. They've had a lot of line outs at that level and are just really good at picking teams off. And we know the likes of Ross Maloney as well as Van Graan will have a lot of intel around the line out and will have studied Munster. He didn't start this our last week against Saracens, but I would presume they'll give him that start for that Munster game this weekend. So they have real good players, X factor players, but I think line out set piece wise they're really, really tidy around that area. But certainly Munster getting the win away, get the hell out of the Rec and get back to the Cork game, I think it would be a good start to kick off, I suppose, that long amount of games, because if you look just after Christmas, they're straight back into the European games as well. So it's a tough period, and those type of games, if you've 10 in a row, whatever it is, maybe one week off in the midst of that, you want to be starting with that win, and it's hard to go over there and get it. But certainly I think Munster will have learnt a lot from that second half of the Stormers. And they'll have, I have no doubt in my mind, when they go over and they approach this game, they'll be really aggressive in how they're doing it, because they know they'll have to be, especially with that front of Obama and Thomas Detoit as well. They need to settle down that scrum.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Munson going to win, as I say, will set things up very, very nicely for a big weekend in Cork the following weekend. We'll be discussing that on next week's episode of the Red 78. Just before we wrap up, Quinny, I just wanted to mention Kevin Sinfield was with us this morning, obviously rugby league legend with Leeds Rhinos in England. As the current England Rugby Union skills and kicking coach, he's raised over 10 million quid for motor neuron disease over the last couple of years in memory of his friend Rob Burrow, who passed away very, very sadly from the disease. But fairly poignant today as well, because obviously there's that connection with Munster and Paul Derbyshire, the former head of strength and conditioning, who passed away from motor neuron disease as well. And you would have worked with Paul Quinney back in the day.
Yeah, Paul was a great friend of not just me, but all the squad. We loved him. He was brilliant. Great relationship. You didn't cross him. He trained with us. He pushed us. Great way of dealing with people. And it was incredibly sad and horrific what for his wife, Lindsay, and for the kids as well at the time. You know, I think people will probably remember him coming over onto the field in 2011 when we won the URC, and he was in the wheelchair and stuff like that, and he passed away a short time after that. It had an horrific effect on everybody, and what Kevin Sinfield is doing, obviously being in Cork today and running a marathon there. Is it the first or second of seven?
Second of seven today,
which is phenomenal. Seven consecutive marathons. You know, he's what he's doing, Kevin Sinfield, is just remarkable, really. And the fundraising and the awareness he's bringing to a terrible disease, motor neurons disease. So, yeah, I think everyone in Munster remembers Paul very, very fondly, and he was very helpful to so many of us as players. So, yeah, it's great to see what Kevin Sinfield is doing and has done so far.
All right. We've heard from the pundits. Now it's time to hear from the head coach. Here's Clayton McMillan speaking at the press conference.
Okay, everyone, here is Clayton, and call is recording, so we'll start off with live when you're ready, please.
Hi, Clayton. How are things?
Good, thank you.
I'm sure by now you've been made well aware how much the Munster people love the Champions Cup. How much are you looking forward to sinking your teeth into it this weekend?
Yeah, can't wait. There's been a lot of excitement around the team, around you know, the province. It's an exciting part of the year, and you know, we're keen to see how we shape up against some of the best teams in the world.
And the game obviously coming a little bit too soon for Jack after picking up that knock at the weekend. Would you be hopeful he could be okay for next week against Gloucester, or is it a wait and see?
Oh, no, I think it's a fairly strong chance that he'll be available. He improved actually pretty rapidly over the week, but he just wasn't quite ready early enough to be a serious consideration for tomorrow's game. But it continues to progress at the same rate, he'll be on the team sheet next week.
Good stuff. How has Michael Alonso settled in this week?
Yeah, it's been great actually. Look, he's an experienced character, and he's come in, he's fitted in seamlessly. He's familiar with a number of the bodies that we already have here. Really good addition, and you know, we'll put him onto the bench, and he'll play an important role from there.
And just finally for me then, on Bath specifically, obviously you played them in pre-season. Is there much, can you take much from a pre-season game like that, or is this a different beast entirely?
No, not really. It feels like a lot of water's run under the bridge since then. Missing a number of players. We were missing a number of players. The conditions were a lot different. And you know, we've both been sort of toiling away in our own competition. So, but they're a team to be highly respected. Premiership winners, on top of the table at the moment. Solid roster, good coaching staff. So, you know, we aren't expecting any favours, but we're looking forward to rolling up our sleeves tomorrow and giving a good account of ourselves.
Thanks, Clayton. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll switch to Embargo, so please.
Can I just get one question in there?
Oh, yeah, drive on.
Clayton, just in terms of the pack and Sean Klein coming back in after Springboks duty, I'm sure you're delighted to have him back, fit and healthy and ready to go straight away.
Yeah, well, he's a big man, experienced. That's it, that big body that is required in these types of fixtures. So he's been a welcome addition. He's a good quality man who, is Munster through and through, really. He's been a part of the furniture for a long time now, and we miss him when he's not there, so we're really grateful to have him back.
Just very finally from myself, you talk about, obviously, the home form versus the away form so far this season. You'll be looking for, obviously, another massive away performance. Probably need your best of the season here away from home.
I would think so. Look, last week was another one of those sort of Jekyll and Hyde performances where we probably played some of our best rugby in the first half and really didn't show up in the second. So that was unfortunate because we wanted to make, we want to continue to make our home ground a real fortress. But we have shown some form when we played away from home, and it's sort of backs to the wall stuff here against the quality side. So the focus has been good. The training week has been good. Now we're ready to give it a shake.
Thanks very much, Clayton.
All right, moving on. And earlier this week, as you've heard earlier, actually, Rory and Twinny talking about it, rugby league legend Kevin Sinfield was in Cork in the second leg of his 7-in-7 together challenge. The former Leeds Rhinos and England star is running 7 ultra marathons in 7 days to raise funds for various motor neuron disease charities in memory of his friend and former teammate Rob Burrow, who passed away from the disease last year. And Kevin will finish ultra number 7 tomorrow at Headingley Stadium, home of the Rhinos. Sinfield was joined in Cork by Munster legend Dunica O'Callaghan. And let's take a listen now to their chat with KC before they departed on Tuesday.
Welcome to Red FM. Welcome to Cork. Kev, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Rory's been telling us all about this insane challenge that you're doing. And as, a respected and loved rugby icon from the UK who has been in the game for so long, you have decided to do something which is utterly bonkers, first of all. How many ultramarathons are we talking?
7.
7. One down. Yeah. How's the body?
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it. I think anybody who's followed this journey will know we've been in Ireland before. We came to Dublin.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Last year was in Belfast as well. So, we've had a really warm welcome wherever we've been. Mm-hmm. This is our 6th challenge. So throughout that time, there's been a range of different ultramarathons and marathons, and, we're running for motor neuron disease. Former teammate, when I was playing rugby league, got diagnosed and sadly passed away about 18 months ago. But on the back of the great work that Doddy Weir did, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with Doddy, he did a wonderful job of campaigning and banging heads together trying to find a cure. That started off a whole host of different fundraising and charity events. And when Rob got diagnosed, it was like ex-players do.
Yeah.
Rugby's great at pulling people together and keeping people together, and you try and do your bit for a mate. And we set off to run our first challenge 5 years ago, and we're here now on our 6th. So, trying to raise money and awareness for several MND charities, especially the Irish MND today.
Okay.
And, the great thing about the running we do, we try and pull people together. We want the community. We want to show the community how important they are, how loved they are, and how cared for they are.
Yeah. What motivates a man to do this? I know, obviously, it's a very personal thing for you, having that close connection. But for you to do such an extreme challenge on this, I mean, you're constantly thinking of that friend of yours who has passed away, and everybody else is going through this horrific disease at the moment.
Yeah, I think I can't think about Rob every step.
Yeah.
He's front and centre, and we wear the number 7, and everything's built around that number 7 because that was the number he played. And I think the great thing about rugby of both codes is you look after each other, and whether that's on the field or when you've retired and you move on beyond that, that camaraderie, that team shit, and how you look after each other is crucial. So actually, the well wishes, seeing our fund rise is a massive energy giver. To have Dunica with us today, we've had some wonderful sports people come out and support us, some wonderful celebs come out and support us. over the last 5 years. So it makes a huge difference. And yeah, to have someone of his calibre is wonderful.
We're going to talk to that legend in a moment. Tell me about the fund currently sitting in the pot. How much have you raised?
Yeah, it's about £460,000 currently. Our target is, again, this challenge is built around the seven, so £777,777.
All the sevens, yeah.
Over the last 5 years, you know, this team, our team's a wonderful team, by the way. And when you ask, keep me going, these guys keep me going. But over the last 5 years, we've raised in excess of 10 million doing these runs and these challenges, so these events. So, we've tried to change the dial and move things on for M&D alongside a whole host of other people who are doing great things.
Brilliant. Hello, Donica.
Hi.
You know, we used to be, you know, arch enemies.
We're fellow rebels.
In the breakfast radio sphere, he was up in Dublin trying to rob my audience.
No chance.
How are you, buddy? It's great to see you.
I'm great. Yeah. I'm delighted to be here. I'll be honest with you. It's an honor. Kevin Sinfield is someone that is massively respected.
Yeah.
In our game, both sides of it, he's done an incredible job in his boots, but I think what Kevin's done post-playing has been quite remarkable, quite incredible. And you look for good examples the whole time. You look for people to stand up, and what he's done for not only his friend, but the motor neuron community has been quite incredible. So an honour. Yeah.
Stand up and fight, as they say, up this neck of the woods. Tell me about the Munster connection as well.
Yeah, one of our great teammates, Paul Derbyshire, sadly passed away from motor neuron disease. And Kevin will tell you get really tight with your strength and conditioning coach. They're the kind of, they're the person that you kind of open up to.
Yeah.
They really keep you to account. And he was just this incredible guy. Played rugby league for Warrington, came over, changed the way we trained, never missed a session, did every rep with us, and just brought us to be better. And he used to write a lovely thing in our dressing room, Casey, before matches. We used to put up a whiteboard with all these kind of notes, and just before kickoff, he'd come in and wipe it off, and he just put, "The work you do for the man beside you makes you a better man." And I think that's quite amped for today, and it's quite amped for that rugby league mentality of always having your teammates back. And what Kevin's done for not only Rob but Daddy Weir, we could mention so many more. It's been quite incredible.
It's going to be an emotional day for you here, for everyone involved in it, for your crew from BBC Breakfast that are documenting this whole thing. The amount of people that are behind this and are supporting you, it must be overwhelming, Kev. It's just incredible.
Yeah, the support we've had has been so warm, and I think it's what it's shown us and really highlighted for us is people across the UK and Ireland care about this community. And perhaps previously they've not had an avenue or a way to show that, and now they've got one. If you think about this disease, how brutal it can be, 50% of those diagnosed die within 2 years, and that's been happening for decades and decades, and it's massively underfunded. And the only way we change that is by raising money and giving it to some guys who have got smarter brains than mine, who can get their heads together and try and find a cure. A bit like when we all got our heads together to find a cure for COVID, a vaccine for COVID, this can be fixed. And
how close do you think we are to that?
That's a really difficult question to answer. Yeah. I ask that question a lot of the researchers. I still think we're a fair stretch. But what's really important alongside this, and this has been a big driver for our team, as much as we put towards trying to find a cure, there's as much going into helping families who are living with M&D now.
Because
it's so challenging for families. We saw firsthand with Rob and certainly with Doddy as well. It rips families apart.
They have
to be so brave and courageous to fight through it.
Okay. You know Cork is all uphill, buddy.
Definitely. What goes up must come down.
You prefer running uphill, you
I wish. Do like running.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God, you're insane. Then nothing but the best of luck. It's an honour to meet you, and Donica for being part of this as well, for giving your time to your whole team. We're starting outside Red FM in about 10 minutes for Ultramarathon number 2 in the Irish Lake. Kevin, everybody, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
GiveAsYouLive.com is the website, right? Yeah. If anybody wants to make a donation, GiveAsYouLive.com. If you've been affected by what you've heard.
If you just search 7 in 7 together, it'll come up.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Best of luck. We'll be following you all day today. Kevin, thank you so much.
Brilliant stuff. Plenty more sporting action coming in. All right, welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you. Before I hand over the reins to Marty Guilfoyle, a bit of rugby in the Energy All-Ireland League today. Division 1A, Cork Conn had a good win over Old Belvedere. They beat them 21 points to 15. In Division 1B, Highfield, they also won at 26 points to 19 against Dublin University, also known as Trinity, while UCC lost out to City of Armagh, 34 points to 24 on that one. And those Energia AIL updates are with thanks to Energia. Think of the possibilities. Time to turn to Cork City now, and was great to have young journalist Jake Galvin in studio to chat about the state of the club at the minute. From season tickets to next year's hopes, please give a warm Big Red Bench welcome to Jake. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Jake Galvin, a journalist with The Echo here in Cork. You might have seen his articles on Cork City lately. Jake, how are you? Maybe as a person first rather than a Cork City fan, because it's been an absolute disaster on the city front this season.
Yeah, I'm good, Dan. Thanks for having me on today. Look, I'm doing well anyway, besides the point that Cork City aren't going too well, to know yourself.
Yeah, we'll get straight into that. Well, season tickets were announced during the week. We'll have a quick look at the pricing here today. It's gone back because of First Division and the relegation. Adults prices £15, juvenile a tenner, senior a tenner, child's price is a fiver, and then for the season ticket themselves, the adult is 240 for the year, juvenile 13 to 18, 160, a senior over the age of 65, 160, child under 13, £80, and the reserve seat then an extra 100 on top of that. Do you think, with us being back in First Division, Jake, we've got the pricing right this time?
Look, the €15, he's obviously not going to drop it below that. He obviously needs to make a bit of a buck out of it himself, do you know? Look, he's never going to drop it to 10 with a juvenile being 10 as well. But even looking at the senior over 65 there, like €160 to go out and watch Cork City, what, nearly 16, 17 times in the season. Look, it's a bit expensive, I'll be honest with you, for the First Division and for the quality of football that's being produced week in, week out. Mm-hmm. Do you know, I think it's still a tad steep, like.
Maybe a tad, but I suppose it's as best the City fans can probably ask for in the club's current environment. To be fair, yeah. I think they've got it fairly spot on. Of course, as well, we are a professional club, so considering a lot of, other clubs in the First Division, and fairness to our friends down in Cove Ramblers, I think they've got it fairly spot on. I think it was the two adults, two kids, like, geez, was it 400 and something for the year, 440 maybe euro, and that just seems like incredible value to me.
Yeah,
I think it was
yeah.
a bit of a Black Friday thing, and that's working out at great value per game. Looking at this First Division now, the graveyard division, I don't think the club have actually still acknowledged that. I don't know how many weeks on that we have been in fact relegated. I don't know, are they waiting for the Dundalk situation to unfold or what? But how do you think we'll fare in the First Division next season?
Looking, it's a fairly dire look now, to be honest, looking down into another year in the First Division. Look, hopefully the whole thing of going straight back up should be the club's main priority, but the lack of signings nearly looks at, say, a negative kind of look in terms of moving forward, with Benny Couto going down to Waterford and only signing Niall O'Keefe from Cove. Like, it doesn't give a positive reading going into the season.
No, it definitely doesn't. There's rumours that Brodie Lee, of course, might be going to Hull. There's rumours going around, I don't know how true or not, that he was spotted in a Hull tracksuit, and he was at a Hull game, at least on his Instagram story, I think, in the last day or two as well. So that'd be another departure we'd probably badly want to need, especially if we're having this youth academy kind of structure going forward. Do you think there's going to be many more that leave and depart us for this First Division?
I can't really see it happening, to be honest with you. No, not really.
Oh, hopefully Keith and Shawnee stay anyway. Surely yeah. those two, like, they'll get us up. What positives do you think we can take going into the season, if there's any really at this stage?
Look, it might give the younger lads a bit of confidence getting match football in and out and getting, say, the taste of winning nearly back into their mouths of such, like, that they haven't got the whole year. And trying to nearly get, say, a solid team going mm-hmm. into the season, like, as you've seen there from last season. It was very inconsistent with big injuries like Keaton, Maguire, Bulger out at the start of the season, like, especially the game down in Waterford, mm-hmm. the first away game, seen as the Shamrock game was called off. Like, Keaton and Bulger getting injured in the same game, like, or sorry, not Keating, Maguire, it just doesn't help. Like,
no, definitely not, definitely not. The City fan base at the moment, do you think it's fair to say they've checked out at this stage? How many years are this now? Are we going in spinning the first division? Like, is it three out of the last
five or six? Like, there's obviously going to be frustration by Lova, like, you know, and you've seen it there with the protests. Like, look, you may say that it wasn't, like, you know, asked for, but look, it's something had to give. Like,
yeah, absolutely, it definitely did. And I think just us getting to the cup final staved off it any more protests. That was kind of the clubs maybe saving grace in that one, attendance wise. Like, it is important for clubs' revenue, things like that. And to be fair, I think they have gotten the ticket pricing correct this year. And I know people were giving out that there was no renewal discount for current season ticket holders, so they might have frustrations on that one. But how many do you think will be going to the Cross on average this season?
On average, I can't see anything above 2,000. Like,
yeah, that hardcore City support. Like, I'd say it could be even less. Like, we're talking, I'd say we're probably looking at average 1,700, 1,800, ain't great. And there's only so many Munster derbies as much as they'll be bigged 100%. Up against Cove Ramblers and Kerry, like, in fairness. But I guarantee you, they'll be pushing for that Kerry Conn Healy game, first game of Turner's Cross next year. They'll try to get the place rocking as much as they can. What have you made of City's season gone by? Like, was there any highlight for you in particular, or what stood out for you?
Look, the highlight was obviously most people's going to be the cup semi-final against Pats, where they really turned it on. But look, the story of City's season was just inconsistency, really. Like, for most of the games they were nearly in the game, there was no game, well, there was maybe two or three games you could point out that they were absolutely hockeyed off the pitch, and that was probably the two games up in Tala. And that would nearly be about it that you could point out that would actually be hockeyings. But, like, for part of it, it was nearly the sense of lack of depth for City this year of such.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nearly what caught them.
Depth in the strike force. Like, it's just unforgivable thinking Seanan Maguire wouldn't go the season without getting injured at some point. And Keats, he's been, you know, he's had his injuries certainly with us anyway. So, we just really needed more reinforcement up top. Hopefully the next time we're in the Premier Division, whether it's next year or 2 years' time now at this stage or not, we'll wait and see how we get on there. Jornash, how do you think he's fared as City manager?
You see, it's hard to read into it, Jor. Like, he's very nearly set in his ways of such. Like, he will try out a thing, and look, if it doesn't work, he'll try it again, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to be open-minded going into a job of that calibre, say the stature of the club and what he was facing into, really.
Yeah.
With the job that Tim Clancy did, brought him straight back up to the Premier Division, having probably one of the best Premier Division seasons the club has ever seen, or maybe in the league, some people would argue. But with Jor, I just don't think he's done enough this year to, you know, warrant him another Premier Division season.
Yeah, I agree. But if he wins first division, like, the club will always argue you have to, like,
100%.
Even if personally, maybe not, but, like,
yeah,
I know the club are always going to come down on their men, maybe, to be fair.
Yeah.
Or on the side of their men. Look, Jake, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Hopefully, City do the business. The unbeaten streak next year, though, will go for that. That should be the aim, nothing less.
Thanks a million for having me on, Dan. Thanks a million.
Yeah, brilliant stuff from Jake there. Looking at the Premier League, Leeds United 0, Liverpool 0. Liverpool apparently going well enough so far, just haven't been able to put enough into attack at the moment, apparently. The front three may be letting them down at times, but if you're a Liverpool fan, things might be looking hopeful on this occasion, but you never know until it's over. One that was a good result in the Premier League in terms of making it close and making it a bit more tight, Aston Villa scored their last minute winner to beat Arsenal earlier on. We're finished 2-1, and Tom Ross had the full time report from Villa Park.
Great drama, great excitement at Villa Park with only 1 second remaining. Buendia won the game for Aston Villa. 4 minutes added, and Lewis the final seconds, he got the ball into the back of the net to win 3 points for Villa and throw the Premier League title race wide open. Matty Cash had put Villa in front, and Trossard had equalised. And to be fair, Villa had some great chances in the second half, so did Arsenal. But it was Emi Buendia that wins the game for Aston Villa. Aston Villa 2, Arsenal 1.
Keep them going with results. Leinster 24 points to Harlequins 14 in their Champions Cup clash. Hopefully our Munster lads can get the job done against Bath earlier, or later rather, in the rec at 8. Speaking of, I don't know, it was an absolute honour anyway. 2 weeks ago, I actually got to catch up with Patrick Horgan, the Cork J legend, and here's that chat.
Well, we were never short of questions to ask, but it was made even easier yesterday by your announcement that you'd be joining the Cork Selectors. How did that come about?
It was something I was asked to do, and while I said I was going to have a think about it, there wasn't much thinking involved, really. Just something I'm interested in. Something I didn't think I'd be asked to do anytime soon or anything like that, because I didn't think I'd be the one to be asked. But I suppose an easy answer for me, being involved with young fellas under 20s that are, you know, so keen on learning and trying to make the next step up to the senior panel. If they think I can benefit them in any way, it's an easy answer for me. So I'm only happy to be in there and looking forward.
Well, I did speak to Ben Cunningham about you before, and he said, you know, how he could just approach you any time he wanted. Is that always something you had an interest in coaching the next talent Cork hurling?
Yeah, well, there's so much goes on in hurling, especially at the really high level of senior, that, you know, fellas have to learn some way, and if they're seeing themselves that, oh, I'm a bit short here, or I need to know something here or there, someone else probably does know the answer to that, and if I'm that person that they can ask, I'd be only too happy to share if I know it. So it's something I enjoy doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Noel who asked you.
Yeah. To him and Don Logue, it's asked there last week, and I said last more or less straight away. Yeah. So we haven't met yet. Nothing has happened yet. So I'm looking forward to all that, and just see, you know, how it all pans out, and the roles involved and all that. And
do you think senior management could be something in your future someday?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Haven't even tried this yet, but I'd imagine it's something I will enjoy. And if I do, who knows? But until then, I'll just enjoy the opportunity that I have now to see what it's like inside, on the other side of the fence, I suppose, and see where I can go with it. Yeah.
If you think, if you got Liam McCarthy as a manager, do you think that would take off that Liam McCarthy box for you?
I don't know. I don't really care about it being ticked or not, but you know, it's something I don't put too much thought into. I kind of think more of the good days that we had and the positives, and, you know, the joy kind of I was given from just being down training and being with the boys every night and trying to be the best we can be, and, you know, trying to, you know, live in our dream, basically.
I know you're talking about joy, so this is a rotten one, but 3 or 4 months on now, how have you reflected from that Ireland against
them? Yeah, I haven't thought about it too much. Obviously really massively disappointed for a while after it. But as soon as that clears, like, what are you going to do? There's things to be done. There's to move on, and that sounds easy to say no, but it wasn't easy at the time. And I'd imagine, you know, even the boys going back now, that it's something that will be with them for a big part of the year ahead, and hopefully it'll drive them on an extra small bit, like, just to get it done, like, you know.
When Brian Hayes attacked you at halftime, whatever the rumor was at the time. How soon after the final whistle were you made aware of like that flying around?
It was an obvious spoof, because he knows he wouldn't get stuck with me because I'd flatten him. But it was Tuesday night. I was actually speaking to him. We were actually chatting in the corner of a pub, and someone came over and said, "You're actually supposed to be fighting." He's like, "I didn't know what even they were on about." And next then the messages were Sean, and so then I was like, do you want to go? So here's a wad. And he didn't want it. He's too pretty to be fighting. So
how did you cope with that? Like, not only for yourself, but a lot of the younger lads there being named and defamed, basically, for something that never happened.
Yeah, it's silly. And I feel like the more I'm even talking about it now, the more I feel like, you know, if you're explaining, you're losing, and no one's believing you anyway. So honestly, it couldn't have been a more routine half time. Mm-hmm. Nothing at all happened. I can't remember one thing that happened. But yeah, that's the annoying thing. Like, even I'll say it didn't happen, but there is people still believe.
I know. I was going to ask, like, do you still think, I think it has, the aftermath of that has just lingered about this Cork team?
Not so much. They're strong fellas, and you know what? A lot of them couldn't care less about that kind of stuff. You know, they don't look at what's being said about them or nothing like that, and that's probably the best way to be. And they're strong-minded, and they're driven to be really good hurlers, and they won't change from that. They won't care.
What do you think it is about Cork as a whole that seems to catch the ire of a lot of the nation? I mean, going around wearing anyone but Cork t-shirts, the arrogant tag that's been put on the team, when from my experience it's completely the opposite.
You can make up something, you can make up anything about anyone, and you know, it could stick, or you could believe it, or it might be believable. And I suppose we played in a lot of really big games, and played in front of a lot of big crowds, and I suppose, like, I don't know, if someone didn't like seeing that, or thought we were trying to be someone we're not, or whatever like that, which is never the case, that's on them. Like, we can't control what other people do or say, and as hurlers, and as we call it, high performance athletes, I suppose you call them, like, listening to that is not high performance in any way. So all players would just stay miles from that. Like,
it's kind of uncharted territory for any team in the country, really. Do you think anything should have been done to help you out a small bit?
I thought early on, as a player, I didn't care less. Like, just should, like, at the time we lost the All-Ireland, nothing really could have been worse. We were feeling the pain as it was. It would have been just nice if we were protected a bit better than we were. We were going to be down and out, like, but I just thought it might have been up to others to say, look, this is the story, this is what happened, and not leave it linger too much and move on. And Brian said that players themselves don't really care.
Looking back at the homecoming, do you think there should have been one, or do you think you made the right decision not having one fit?
Yeah,
officially?
I had no idea we were having or not having. I think it was the Monday, I think we found out it wasn't going to happen, and to be honest with you, I still don't know the reason there wasn't one, whether I believe there should have been one or not. Don't know, we had one the year before, there would have been no problem. We've a savage following who would have followed us just about anywhere. Maybe they deserved to be down the park and whatever, just show up, basically. But we know nothing about it. I still don't know why it didn't happen.
What's it like for you playing in front of that juggernaut of the Cork hurling fan base?
Yeah, there's not more. It's the thing I'm probably going to miss most. You know, there's a buzz that comes off it that, like, will never ever be replaced. There's nothing like it, and we're lucky enough to have felt it. You know, it's been on the field there and hearing the roar, or hearing, you know, the excitement of the Cork crowd is something like that you couldn't imagine. Like, it's scary, it's exciting, it's like the best thing you could imagine on a field. Like, you know,
probably the best moment of my life was the Limerick penalty that you stuck. What was that like for you on the pitch?
Oh, it was like a blur now, obviously, but a lot of clear thoughts about the night, and actually what I think more of actually is the free we'd won straight after it. I think it was Barrett got fouled out on the sideline, and I remember walking out to that and thinking, for the first time probably in a while, you'd always say, Jesus, that's low there from the crowd or whatever, but this was just different level altogether. Like, and this was only when the free was just after being won. Never heard anything like it, and it was like, it gave me a heart attack. It was my heart was racing because of the noise, but yeah, I wasn't long getting there, and Pat telling me what to do with the ball, so he calmed me down.
Looking back on Pat's departure, how big of a turning point was that in your decision to retire?
Like, not so big, because you know, it's been something I was thinking, but the only thing I would say is if Pat was there and he wanted me to play, there's no way to say no to Pat. Like, I don't think anybody would, any player that we have would say no to him. He was just loved by everyone involved, and fellas would have done just about anything for him. Yeah.
You've seen a fair few managers come and go, and I'm not trying to call you old, but what was it about Pat that seemed to have such a great relationship between he as a player base and himself?
He was just brilliant, very direct. Like, all managers are, you know, they all have their own strengths. I suppose just the way Pat came about and spoke to players and gained the support, it was through him. Like, we gained the support we did, obviously, in how he prepared the team and what he needed from the team, I suppose, what he wanted to see on the field from the team to give people in the stand, you know, something to follow, something to cheer on. Like, and we done that for a good while anyway.
Do you think Ben O'Connor is that man to bring that Lee McCarthy back to Leaside?
Hopefully. You know, I definitely know that we've definitely have the players for it. You know, we played great hurling last year. We still have those players. They're all a bit older and a bit wiser as regards, you know, fellas just breaking onto the team, having other years' experience. But we've no one now. The oldest we have is probably 28. It's a Harnady. Sorry, no. But yeah, he's flying as well, obviously. But there's no reason why they're not one of the top teams in the country still. Like, so they've every chance. Yeah.
Who do you think are the younger guys in that dressing room that are going to get them over the line?
There's a few. I don't know. Is Ben Cunningham going back in after his injury? I know he had an injury for a while. Luke Mullins from the Glenow. Paddy Power's back. Good, like, really good player. Really good. I hope he's all right with his injuries, and I hope he gives it the shot, because before he got injured last year, he was really, really good. And I know I'm going to leave out someone, so I'm going to stop there. But there's loads like that. And it's not as if it's a team easy to break onto, because the 15 that are playing are really good as well. So for someone to break in, they're going to have to really go after it, you know.
After the way the final went, do you think mentally they're capable of bouncing back, no problem?
100%. Small bit of downtime, small bit of you know, feeling down. As soon as they go back training, they'll be gone.
If they do go on and win it in the next year or two, will that be a regret of yours, having left
now? Nah, I'm 37. I'm after playing, I don't know how many championship games and league games, and you know, more than probably most. So I'm only happy with everything I've done. I'm lucky I've played as much as I have, so I can't really, you know, give over. I've made the decision, and hopefully they win it.
Well, Jesus, there's some look stats here, like four All-Stars, top championship scorer of all time, four Munsters. But what's been the highlight for you in that Cork jersey?
I suppose more recent, like, I know the finals and big games down through the years and all that, more recent, like, is the buzz that the team have got off, the Cork support, players that I've been lucky enough to play with down through the years. And I suppose then another thing that came up with a goal, I was thinking highlights on the field, but probably one of the biggest highlights for me is just having Jack there for the last 3 years as well, you know, and him coming onto the field after matches, and means a lot to me, and you know, seeing him happy and stuff. So it's like, that's what more could I ask for.
Do you think you'll be sending him down to the GA club soon enough to speak up?
He's after going down a few Sundays already. He's he didn't even see a slither. He's just chatting away around there, but he's the helmet on anyway. So
that's the stuff. On another note, I know you're a huge NFL fan, and you were perhaps next to Roy Keane. What was that conversation like?
It was unreal, because going up the road, I was just saying, when I go to me and my buddy, we didn't know where we were sitting. We just knew we took tickets, and went in. It was actually Roger Goodell's box that I didn't know, and we were forced there, obviously, with excitement. So then some fella came over and said, "Yeah, Roy's on the way." I'm like, is this even happening? But oh, it was brilliant. Went out, sat down straight away, and, you know, you'd be kind of half afraid to even speak to him, because you're going, oh, he could knock me out here, like, he could, you know, or he could, whatever. But he was so nice, Jesus. He turned straight away to the two of us, and we were just chatting the whole half and having a good laugh, knowing him, to be fair. And yeah, he was just exactly like he is on the TV.
He's a big Cork hurling fan, to be fair.
Yeah, he not one change in him. You know, it's just the way he is. Stone fella.
I also know you're a huge Tom Brady fan. What is it about Tom that you admire?
I suppose just doing, winning what he has actually is number one, because it can't ever happen again, I'd say. But I suppose his drive too to be the best he can be, and wasn't exactly athletic or wasn't exactly anything, like he found his way to do things, and that's something to definitely look up to. He is from looking and reading stories about him and hearing stories about him, like it's hard to see someone more driven in a professional sport than he was. All he wanted to do was win, and you hear loads of different stories of how he done that. But and it's something to look up to, and it's something to, for anybody playing high level sport, like to listen to. It's just savage.
You see similarities between yourself and himself?
No. But it's, you know, especially when he was getting older there, like, you know, you'd hear him and you're like, Jesus, he's... But, you know, because sometimes professional sports is like, they talk differently, you know, about what's next. But he was just down to winning, like, and hearing him on the sideline, even there in the mic'd up kind of stuff is, there's hours of listening, and it's just like, it would drive you on, like, yeah.
He has his TB12 brand Clifford's released his own range. Are you going to see Patrick Carr?
Oh, yeah, I see that. I have to get a couple of those t-shirts. Leave that to the boys. I've seen it though, nice gear. Nice stuff.
What's next for Patrick Corrigan anyway, full focus in the under-20s?
Yeah, training with myself, still training every day, so that's what I'll keep doing. Go to the alley, play with the Glen, be the best I can be for them, and we'll see after that.
What is it about Glen Rovers that's just such a special club, not just in Cork, but nationally?
I don't know, I suppose like the history of the place is number one, and I suppose the people around there. It's just something that is kind of not driven into us, it's kind of put into us like from early on, that like it's an important place, and it's important to try your best, and winning is important down there, and it's a whole load of things. I suppose any player like that I play with now, and I have played with, like, it seems to mean a lot more than just playing hurling to them, like, and that's we all feel about the players, and hopefully we can just win again with them and get a good buzz off that again.
Lastly, we'll wrap it up. Thanks so much from all the Cork fans, I'm sure. But is there anything you want to say to the Cork fans who've offered their support to you over?
No, like, will I go there? Like, will I go? The other question you asked was, you know, like, what am I going to miss? Like, that's what I'm going to miss, and that's obviously thanks to them. But that's just something that will never be replaced, I suppose. And there's no, like, from what I can see out there, there's no other support like the Cork hurling support, like, and that's going to continue, obviously, and it's good for the boys, because I'm telling you, it definitely does draw another few percent out of you when you need it most, so they'll need that again.
Brilliant stuff there. It was great to catch up with Cork legend Patrick Corrigan. Good news on the Liverpool front. 2 goals in 2 minutes from Ekitike have them 2-0 in front of Leeds United. So looking good there on that front. Dan Casey signing off from the Big Red Bench. Marty Gilfoyle is on the way next.
While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.